All right, so because this is such a highly lucrative profession, this publishing and licensing, what made you decide to get into it?
Stupidity.
All right, moving on. Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its fifth year, number 209, Broadway Play Publishing. Yes, this is episode 209 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Last week ended 4 years of regular weekly podcasting, and this week begins what will hopefully be another 4 years or more. And it seems fitting that we begin our fifth year with the announcement that the script for our sixth stage show, completely Hollywood abridged, will be published this month by Broadway Play Publishing. Broadway Play Publishing publishes the scripts and controls the licensing rights for the entire complete abridged oeuvre, and Kip Gould is the man behind it. Kip agreed to have coffee with us in a fantastically crowded New York diner when we were in New York City last March performing at the New Victory Theater. Kip has treated us very well over the years, and he's a very upbeat guy, but he decided to start our conversation with the bad news.
I remember about 20 years ago, they had this gathering of playwrights. And I remember Lanford Wilson. I mean, you can't get a more eminent, talented American playwright than Lanford Wilson talking about how he had been, at that point, he'd been writing plays for 20 or 25 years and had never been able to make a living through the income from his plays. I mean, this is Lanford Wilson. And then Michael Weller stands up and says, same here, and it is sad, but I don't think so. In some ways, nothing is different in that for a playwright, there are very, very, very few playwrights that can earn a living through the licensing of their plays. They have to do other things, like be actors or teach or write for film or television. But in an ideal world, playwrights would be able to earn enough from the licensing of their plays.
Well, we sure got in the right business, didn't we?
We did. So for people who maybe haven't been to the Broadway Play Publishing website, who were the famous playwrights that publish in your company?
Well, Tony Kushner and Neil LaBute are far and away my most famous playwrights. The other plays that do really well or even moderately well in terms of licensing, Eric Overmyer's On the Verge.
One of my favorites. Yeah.
It's now 25 years old, but just keeps getting, it is so imaginative and brilliant. It just keeps getting done and done. It helps that it's three women and one man.
Yeah.
Connie Congdon's Tales of the Lost Four Micans is another play that just is sort of wonderfully imaginative and just keeps getting done and done and done. But Shakespeare abridged, that's the one that pays the bills.
The complete works of William Shakespeare abridged is probably performed more than the complete history of America, the Bible abridged, all the great books abridged, certainly Western civilization abridged, combined.
Definitely.
Although we have high hopes for Completely Hollywood, which will be published later this year.
We are getting a lot of calls for that. So we really hope to be able to start licensing it soon.
All right, so because this is such a highly lucrative profession, this publishing and licensing, what made you decide to get into it?
Stupidity.
All right, moving on.
No, I had to go back to Eric Overmyer for a second. He once described the need that some people have to go to the theater and be involved in theater and their love for the theater. It's like a it's like a chronic disease that it won't kill you, but it cripples you for life. So and we all, of course, blame our parents for having taken us to the theater at, you know, age 5 or whatever, and having been that gene was activated that gets that special thrill from live performance.
Right.
And for me, and my parents took me to a Gilbert and Sullivan, I think they also took me into downtown Los Angeles too. It had to have been the Road production of Sound of Music. You know, I fell in love with Liesl or whoever. So there's that. I think there's definitely, I firmly believe that they will discover that there's a genetic component to people's love for the live theater, and so in the future we'll be able to turn that off.
did you have a background in publishing or anything? Because growing up, the only connection I had to scripts was just I would lease them when I would do a production of whatever, Oklahoma or 1776, whatever it was.
Right, so that gets us to the next thing, is that, so the thing about the theater is that once the production is closed, you don't have anything except the script. And so, to me, I always wanted some way to make my contribution to the theater. So, by publishing a play, you are keeping it alive, as inadequate as a script is in comparison to a live performance. The script is all you have at a certain point. So that's my contribution to the theater.
Well, and you're doing God's work.
Well, yeah. So I'm sorry. So in what year did Broadway Play Publishing open?
1982.
Okay.
I've been doing it a really long time. I worked at Samuel French for 3 years before that. Learned how the business worked.
You're coming up on 30 years, just as the RRC is coming up on 30 years.
There you go.
We'll have to go out for coffee or something. That'll be fun.
So, I was coaching. I'm teaching part time at some colleges in the Bay Area, and I was coaching American College Theater Festival pair, and they wanted to. Is it The Shape of Things? Neil LaBute.
Yeah.
And so,
far and away, the most popular of the Neil LaBute titles is Shape of Things.
Different publishers have different rules for whether you can do these in competitions. Are you allowed to cut them? Do you have to pay for it? What's your policy on it? And do people ask about this all the time?
Yes, they ask about it all the time. People love dealing with Broadway Play Publishing because we let them do it for free. Because otherwise it's just a total pain in the neck. Because what are you going to do? Charge somebody $10?
Yeah.
And then my commission on that is 20%, so I'm going to spend, so to earn $2, I'm going to spend time on the phone or it's emails going back and forth and accounting it to the authors. It's just not worth the trouble. So about eight or 9 years ago, I decided it made much more sense just to let, and if it's in competition, if nobody's making any money, then it's free. And what we say about cuttings is, and I don't even like the word cutting, I prefer excerpting, but they need to make it clear that if they are jumping from one section of the play to another, that it be clear to the audience that that is what they're doing.
Right.
Because they don't want to be giving the illusion that that is what the way the play was written.
Right.
So it needs to be discrete chunks of the play and it be clear when they're jumping from one to the other.
Right. Well, so Broadway Play Publishing makes its money from, takes 20% of the amateur performances, and then, but you also sell the scripts and you make money from that. And can you make money?
Theory. And so if you want to continue on this depressing theme, I have a counterpart in England. His name is Nick Hearn, and he's actually been publishing plays. Originally, he was with Methuen for years, and published. He was the
He was the sort of editor-in-chief at Methuen Publishing, Carol Churchill, Edward Bond, Stoppard, basically every important English playwright 25 years ago was being published by Nick Hearn at Methuen. And then Nick, about 15 or 20 years ago, went out on his own, and now he is Nick Hearn Books. And every time I get together with Nick, I'm always amazed to hear how when he publishes a play, he will print, usually he will print 2,000 copies. Now, England is a much smaller country, yet he is generally able, even if it's a new play that nobody has ever heard of, he's able to sell those 2,000 copies in 2 or 3 years. That simply doesn't happen in the United States. In England, drama is thought of as part of literature, which of course it is, but there people really, in English classes, people study drama along with poetry and novel and short story and so on. And that simply doesn't happen in the United States. So for me, sure, plays like On the Verge and Tales of the Lost Formicans and all the great books and Complete History of America, those I've sold thousands of copies of. But the average new American play is very difficult, as I say, just to get people don't read them for the sake of reading them. They'll read them. So in general, the people I'm selling to are people who are interested in producing a play.
Right.
I'm Robert Siegel, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Always smart, often funny, and invariably brief.
Well, we've always loved working with you just because you're straightforward, and you know, it's there's nothing esoteric, there's no bullshit, and it's. But would you consider yourself more boutique-y than like Dominus Play Service or Samuel French? I mean, it seems like you're a smaller operation than
those are my two main competitors, and I'm definitely smaller by choice because I made the decision to stupidly to focus just on new American plays, and I made this conscious decision just to focus on new American plays because that's what I love.
Yeah.
And so French and dramatists do musicals, which are much more lucrative. I mean, there's other companies that are in the musical. I mean, it's such a much bigger segment of the business. There's other companies that do musicals as well.
Much bigger headache, too.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's a pain in the neck, yeah, dealing with the music.
Yeah.
There's, in general, I don't do adaptations, although I have done your wonderful adaptation of Kafka.
God bless you. Which I think has probably sold one or at least two copies. Maybe.
At least. So as I say, I made these choices, and which is fine because that's I didn't go into it to get rich, and God knows.
And you succeeded.
And I succeeded. I love American playwrights. I love doing good-looking, quality books, which is not something 25 years ago. Trade publishers stopped publishing plays in America. So for a long time, all there were just the pamphlet-like editions that French and dramatists do. So there's really was a big gap there for good-looking books of plays, and so that is a gap that I am enjoying filling.
Great, they are good looking books.
The new color covers are just great.
Well, the new color covers, and then also you've just in the last year kind of branched out into PDF versions, downloadable scripts. How's that working? Well, how does it work? And A, how's that working out?
Well, if the authors are okay with it, we do offer to send people a PDF of the script, and most of the authors are okay with it buying into the recognizing that although it is slightly easier to send a PDF around once you've got it to copy it or upload it or email it to a friend, on one level, it's not appreciably different from one's ability to photocopy a script. Anytime we send a PDF to somebody, we naturally request that they delete it. They print it out once, delete it,
right,
not copy it, upload it, or email it to anyone. One could argue, however, that if somebody didn't do that and spread the script around, that's a good thing, actually.
Right.
Yes, the author is not getting a royalty in that situation, where every time I sell the PDF, actually, the author's making a lot of royalty. They're about six times as much royalty every time I sell a PDF as they do when I sell a script. So, anyway, you can make the argument that the royalty aside, if the script was out there in the ether, that could be a good thing.
Right.
Well, and I think it's the same, from my point of view, it's the same of letting in competitions do it for free. It gets people, it gets the script out there, people see bits of the script, maybe they want to produce it. And in terms of book sales, is a fraction of what we make from licensing. So if the play, if they forward that PDF and other people see it, then maybe there's another production. We would make more than if we sold them the script.
Yeah. That's the other part of that argument, is that you make your money in the licensing anyway, so that in the licensing of the stage rights, so making money on the scripts isn't as important.
If somebody wanted to say they saw all the great books abridged, how do they go about licensing that script and performing it?
They just go to the website, and there's a formula there that tells them how to calculate royalties, and there's an order form for the script. It's really simple.
It is really simple. It's the most clear-cut royalty formula that I've ever looked at.
Well, here's a question we get frequently through our website. We want to do the history of America. We'd like to do it at a high school with 12 actors. Is that okay?
Yes.
I think it's yes. We get that question frequently from the Shakespeare show. Mm-hmm. Is there a frequently asked question on your site?
That is definitely a question we get.
I've heard it done, certainly with America. I've certainly heard it done with, like an entire class will do it, and so they'll divide up all the parts. I think why not? It's not a reduced way of doing it, but that's perfectly valid way of doing it.
Well, yeah, because in high school you got a lot of students, so if the choice is don't do it at all or do it with 12 people, I'd rather they did it with 12 people.
I mean, our biggest issue is just don't change the script, because then if whatever you change the script and it gets you in trouble, it gets somebody else in trouble, it libels somebody. You know, we stand behind what we've written, but we can't be responsible for what you've added.
Yeah, and don't call yourselves a British Shakespeare Company, which is clearly in the script.
Yeah.
You can do the Complete History of America, Bridge, but you can't. Kip is rolling his eyes over here because he deals with this constantly. You can do the script and title the script, but just don't call yourselves a British Shakespeare Company, because you're not.
Because you ain't.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. If you've been listening to the podcast for 4 years and enjoying it, or even if you've just discovered it, please help us spread the word. Go to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast page on iTunes and leave a reduced review and, why not, an unreduced 5-star rating. Send us your published script via email to feedback@ReducedShakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans on our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, and our Reduced Shakespeare Company fan page at Facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, distinguished playwrong Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Shelby Sessler. No reason, it's just random. Thanks to our friend Robert Siegel at National Public Radio. Special thanks to Kip Gould at Broadway Play Publishing. If you'd like to order the PDF or script for Completely Hollywood Abridged, or for any of our Complete Abridged scripts, go to the Broadway Play Publishing website at BroadwayPlayPubble.com. That's BroadwayPlayPubl.com. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Tichner, 209/627 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. When you get a phone call from Tony Kushner, for instance, does he call up and say, "Kip, it's Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Tony Kushner"? Is that what happens?
No. Tony is a very busy guy, and he's got better things to do than call me up. He has an agent for that.
The funny thing is that when I call Kip, I say I'm Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Reed Martin, even though it's not true.
So he doesn't have time to have coffee with you like we're doing.
That is correct.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.